A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
You are listening to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood on Missed Apex Podcast. We live F1. Welcome to Inside F1 with Joe Saywood, part of the Missed Apex Motorsport Podcast Network. I'm Spanners, the host and producer of Missed Apex Podcast. We are an independent podcast produced in the podcasting shed with the kind permission of our better halves. We aim to bring you a race review before your Monday morning commute. We might be wrong, but we're first. A tiny bit of admin before I bring Joe in. We have on Sunday night live at 8 p.m. our preview and prediction show, because races are just around the corner. I'm so excited I could burst. And how you can get involved with Missed Apex? Well, we have our iRacing final on Missed Apex Motorsport on YouTube. You can find out who took the title. Was it the aggressive David Hatton or the cool as a cucumber Sam Harper? Ice versus fire over on our iRacing channel. And you can get involved with our assault on the official iRacing leagues as well. Email spannersready@gmail.com and use the subject line Map Racing, and we'll get you involved in that. But without further ado, let's bring in the man himself, the man who's been to every Grand Prix since 1988. It's Joe Saywood. How's it going, Joe?
Yeah, that record's going to go bust soon, I fear.
Well, that brings us to our first question. I asked people on Twitter what they wanted to ask you, Joe, and everybody is wondering, Lord Nuka included, will Joe get access to the track, or is it just Sky, who isn't F1, that will be allowed inside the gates? So are you going, and what kind of access do you get? Are you allowed to say?
Yes, I'm going, and the access is negative. Basically, the access is to the press room. There will be an additional amount of information available to those in the press. There are apparently only 10 press journalists going to the first race. So they will get a little bit more than everybody else. Otherwise, there's no point in being there at all. But there is no access allowed to the paddock. And we have to sign all kinds of contracts and things to say that we won't mix with the wrong people between races and all this sort of stuff. So basically, we're not allowed to go to meet anybody. They're all supposed to stay in these little mini bubbles that everyone's talking about. And we're supposed to stay in our own mini bubble, which is outside the paddock bubble. So basically, I'll do the first three races. And afterwards, if the restrictions are still in place, I will not be there. So Silverstone, I'm not going to be there unless they increase the number of media allowed, because they'll allow a second wave of 10 new media. I mean, if you consider there are 300 permanent pass holders,
yeah,
having only 10 is quite dramatic increase. And obviously, we're only being allowed in. The TV is allowed in because they will pay money, aren't they?
Yeah. You know?
So we're just a pain in the neck. And so we'll just be, I don't know how they're going to control things at a place like Silverstone, where the press office is actually next door to the paddock. or you have to go through the paddock to get to the, well, you, I dare say there's a way around that. But in Austria, it's on the wrong side of the track. So if they shut the tunnel, you cannot actually go to the paddock. And even if you tried, they wouldn't let you in. So, and I should add on top of that, I say I'm going, but I'm only going if I pass the COVID test, which I'm taking on Monday. It has to be done 94 hours. I think it's 94, maybe it's 96, before arriving at the racetrack to prove that I'm clear.
Well, how are you feeling? You feeling a bit peaky?
And I feel fine, to be honest. And then I'll do the two Austrias, go to Budapest, and then go home. And basically, I'm going to do it all by car because it's the safest way of doing it. I don't want to go anywhere near an airport for a while. But the way things are going in Formula One at the moment, we won't be seeing very many airports at all this year. I wouldn't be surprised if the first three races are the only three races I do, to be honest, because I think the way things are going, I don't think there'll be any racing in America, in the Americas. I think Brazil, Mexico, Austin, they've all got sufficient problems. I know the Americans are very blasé about all this sort of stuff, but that's why they have such a big number of dead people. But, you know, I think that Formula One is a little bit more aware of the world around and what responsibilities are. And so won't be, I don't see us going there. I don't see it. We've already had all the cancellations. So there's maybe China, Russia is possible. I think they'll try for more races in Europe because it's easier, which is, and the further south in Europe, the later you can go in the year. So this is why we're hearing stories. Mugello, I think, is just to keep Ferrari happy because they're obviously not happy with two Red Bull rings and two Silverstones because they think that plays to other teams. So Mugello is their test track. Therefore, if they can't win there, they're not doing very well.
So how serious is Mugello? Because we've got loads of people asking about that.
No, I think Mugello is quite serious,
Okay, so
it won't be with a crowd. I mean, I don't suppose it'll be with a crowd because Mugello's in the middle of nowhere, even more so than Silverstone, probably. It's a long way. It's 25 miles from the nearest big city, you know. It's like Manicure in that respect. So accommodation is, you're going to have to be traveling long distances and blah-de-blah. So I think that will have to be without a crowd, although they are talking having a crowd at Monza, so I don't know. I think the other one to watch out for is Portimão in Portugal, which is a nice little track. I actually went there one time for the life of me. I went there
Portugal
because they said, will you come and have a look at it because we want to promote it? And I said, you want to pay the airfare? I'll come look at it. And they did. So I went. And it's a great little track. And it's in the middle of nowhere. It's up a one road so they can close it off. I doubt they'll have spectators allowed in, but it will be returning Formula One to Portugal. And, you know, we used to have Grand Prix down in, I mean, that's Portimão's right in the south of Portugal, so the Algarve down near Jerez. And so we used to do stuff at the end of October.
That won't be the worst trip, will it?
No, I mean, you know, if you can't go to North Africa, you know, there was a lot of talk of trying to do something in Marrakesh as well, but I don't think that's going to happen. But basically, if you can get the trucks and you can get the trucks to go to Mugello, which is quite far south, you get the trucks to go to Portimão. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if there was another Spanish circuit being looked at as well. I don't think there are any. I mean, Valencia street circuit ain't going to happen ever again. But Valencia, I don't know, whatever. But if they're struggling to get races, they need to get to 15 to get bills paid. And you know, obviously they want to do 15 easy races. So Sochi won't necessarily be easy because that's fly everything in. It's not trucking it. And therefore it's instantly more difficult.
Yeah.
And Russia is a little bit unclear as to, there's certainly some bad outbreaks in certain cities. And the problem with Sochi is you have to fly there through other cities. The other one to watch out for, I think, would be Istanbul because that's sufficiently east-ish and south-ish to be possible quite late in the year.
Whoa, Istanbul! Then, whoa! We can't let that fly by. I think, like, universally, that is probably the most asked for returning track. You don't get my hopes up. Is that even being considered?
It's been discussed. It has been discussed. Yeah. The only question is whether they can reach a financial agreement with the locals. Just for a one-off, you know, it's. The downside of that, again, is the same thing, a remoteness issue. but you know, if you're talking to, if you're talking about a Formula One core of people, which is less than 1,000, okay, that's still some big hotels, but it's not, it's not really, it's not like having another 300 or 400 pressmen or double the number of TV people, or, you know, the teams are being cut down to the absolute minimum and bunches of VIPs and all these things that aren't happening at the closed races. But I do think there'll be closed races probably for most of the year. And I think we'll end up in Bahrain and Abu Dhabi in December. And I think those are fairly sensible. Now, whether we have two, three, or four races probably depends on how many races they've got to in terms of the numbers.
Okay, so we're getting awfully close to the start of the calendar season. Surely at some point, are they going to cut it off and go, nope, that's all we've got? Or is it going to be fluid?
They need to come up with a number. Because the thing is, teams get paid based on the results. And the finances come based on the number of races. So if you have, let's just say we get to 15, that's 33% less than 22, something like that. My math is never very good. But that fundamentally means that if everybody is paying full whack, which they won't be, but if everyone is paying full whack on the contracts, the revenues are going to be down 33% for the average team. Now, there is no such thing as an average team, but an average team. And then if you look at the numbers, there's $1 billion last year were paid out to the teams. That's 10 teams. So the average, it's not real, but the average is 100 million. Being paid out per team. Doesn't work like that. But basically, if you lose 30% of that, you're talking about teams losing 30 million. Now, it will be different, but a small team losing 30 million. Ferrari, for example, they get a certain percentage off the top of all revenue, so they're going to lose 30%. Whereas Mercedes get a lump sum for winning lots of championships every year. And that's a lump sum, that's not a percentage. So they're going to suffer less on the one hand. And obviously, they're going to suffer. The percentages, basically, most of the prize fund is done on percentages, but they have these odd little deals where, you know, Williams gets 10 million being historically important or whatever. And this is all the stuff they're trying to get rid of in the new Concord agreement and just make it more balanced. And obviously, it's difficult. But basically, we're looking at teams losing 30 million, and which is why there's a lot of panic going on among teams, because they're also going to lose sponsorship revenues as well, to the same kind of level. So, but 15 is where the contracts all kick in and become valid. If you don't get to 15, the validity of the contract, I think, changes, and then it just becomes a mess. But you know, otherwise they're going to be rebates. So, you know, the TV companies will want their money back. If they've paid for the full season, they'll want their money back on a pro rata basis of what they're actually going to be getting. So, and the other thing to bear in mind is that the economic impact of COVID is being felt already. And a lot of people think that the money will only be impacting next year. That's not true. The teams know the percentages of what they won last year. What they don't know this year is the total amount of money that's coming in.
Got it.
And what they do, apparently, is Formula One makes an estimate of what it's going to earn, and it gives the team a sort of note sort of saying, you're going to get X percent of this, and this is the number we think it will be. Now, in the past, apparently, that's been generally under what teams have got. But this year, they don't know. And because they don't know what the overall number is, teams don't know what their budget is. And therefore, you've heard Gunter Steiner, for example, saying, I can't do any development work because I don't know if I'm going to have the money. That's why.
Yeah.
So basically, big teams can afford to develop their cars. Small teams can't, based on the risk factors involved. So, but if you don't know what your revenue stream is, it's quite difficult. And the other thing is, people who say, well, you should just cancel the whole thing and put all the contracts back a year.
No.
Great idea, except for one thing, which is that teams have got to pay staff for a year. And that's fixed costs, you know, all the rest of it. So basically, they can't afford not to go racing. So, you know, the idea of just pushing all the contracts back a year and making it contractually easier is, I understand, rich people might say that, but it's not actually reality. I have to excuse me for a minute because I've got a sign saying low battery, and if that goes out, you won't get any show anymore.
A low battery on your laptop, Joe?
Yes, I just...
Oh, dear. The seven S's. Prior planning and preparation prevents poor performance,
Joe. But I'm not a professional broadcaster like your good self, so there you are. I now have a little green light, and everyone's happy, so there we are.
Good. We're all go. We're all go, then.
And you can edit that bit out of the finished show.
No, I like people to know what I have to deal with on a monthly basis, Joe. I have to say, I hope your background noise doesn't get edited out too much in post, because you've got some lovely bird song in the garden.
Well, I live in the country. I live in a very nice countrified place, and it's very green today. It's lovely, it's been bad for the last couple of weeks, but we had a really super time. I've had a great time in the lockdown because I have enough land not to go bonkers. I've got plenty to do in the garden. And I've developed all kinds of other strange habits like book binding and, stuff. So, yeah, it's interesting times. But I don't know what's going to happen for the rest of the year. But fundamentally, I think the unbroken run is going to end after Hungary.
I've got a solution for that, Joe. I am going to, from now on, I'm going to change that to a man who has been to every non-COVID Grand Prix since 1988. So I've got you covered.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. Basically, it is beyond my control whether I can go. If I can go, I will go. It's as simple as that. If they say you cannot go, and I got a thing from the FIA the other day saying, by agreeing to do this, you do understand that you are also agreeing that you will not necessarily be allowed to go to races after the first three. So it's very clear. People say, well, why are you bother going at all? And there are two reasons for that. One is, because that's my job. Second of all, to be quite honest, there's some PR value being one of the first 10 going.
Sure.
Into the,
of course.
Into the race.
Yeah. Very prestigious.
And also you can, from the press room in Austria, you can take lots of good pictures, and the photographers are struggling too, because there's only, I believe, 10 photographers who are going to be allowed in, and they are going to be embedded in the teams. In other words, each team basically has their own photographer. And so they're going to be in the paddock and around, but they will be restricted a little bit on what they can do. So photography is going to be interesting to see what comes out in these closed races. But the other thing is, there's hospitality and all these sort of things. Forget it. Ain't going to be there. I mean, the teams will get fed by somebody. I think they'll have their own people feeding them, but it won't. The motorhomes won't be there. The whole thing is going to be very different. So. It'll be interesting to see, and that's why they invented the iPhone. Everyone's a photographer these days, so you can expect to see lots of photographs from iPhones. And I've seen that from NASCAR. In NASCAR, they had, when they restarted NASCAR, I think had 4 reporters only on site. And it is going up in number now, I think. Although they are taking lots of risks at the moment. Like they know, the other day they moved a race from Charlotte in North Carolina to Tennessee on the basis that the COVID numbers were rising in Charlotte. So talk about dodging bullets. I mean,
jeez.
I think it's very risky what they're doing. They've had a couple of, they've actually had 3 team members in different, two different teams have tested positive, but they're not actually going to the races. What they've done at the races is they do these tests and they turn people away. And then when you say, well, why have you turned them away? They say, well, it's not up to us to say whether they have COVID. It's up to them. It's a personal thing. In other words, they don't have to admit that anybody's had COVID. But if they have the symptoms, they can turn people away. And that's what they have been doing. So
there's a lot of politics in that, though, isn't there? I mean, do you remember when, Rosberg's,
a lot of politics.
Rosberg's sticky substances on his steering wheel column and Lewis Hamilton's Malaysia engine blow up? Now all you have to do is, get them hot and bothered. You just get your competitor hot and bothered. They'll get turned away from the trap. Honey traps everywhere, Joe. That's what it's going to be.
I don't think that, from what I understand, and I've read this 14-page document endlessly from the FIA about the rules, the media aren't going to have health checks, I think, in the same way that the others are going to. There are 2 levels of citizen in Formula One nowadays. There is the level 1 citizen who's allowed in the paddock and level 2 who isn't. And the media are level 2. So. Or at least the written media are level 2. But we'll see. I don't know how it's going to work out. But But fundamentally, it's going to be, I have no idea who the other people from the written press are, by the way. No clue.
Oh, really?
It'll be interesting to see when we get there. I mean, nobody, there hasn't been a sort of list published. I've just heard rumors about who it might be. And I know also people have, you know, who were invited to go to the first race said, actually, no, I don't want to do that. I'd rather go to Silverstone. So basically have requested to be in the second group as opposed to the first group. So there's a certain amount of pushing and shoving involved. But I just figured, well, I'll go to the first lot. And if the unbroken run, you know, if things change, the unbroken run can continue, in which case I will probably definitely be the only one out there with a long number of races to his name. Because there are some others who have been around almost as long as me. Or actually, I think there's one. In fact, there definitely is one who's got a longer unbroken run than me.
There is? Who's that? Or if you don't want to say that,
my business partner, Mr. David Tremaine, who has three races more than me, I think, and his unbroken run, which means that we will end up being equal if all things COVID happen. Anyway, who knows? That's quite a nice way to finish off, business partners ending up with the same number. Because for years he's always gone, well, I've been to more races than
Oh, that's brilliant.
But yeah, I don't know. I think everybody else is the last sort of stragglers. Bob Constanduros had done endless numbers. He probably still has the outright record, but nobody sort of cares about this stuff, really. Stephen T, the photographer, huge numbers. But they both miss races in the last couple of years for various, you know, there's always weddings, funerals, whatever. Things happen. Or I think in the case of Stephen, it was financial incentive to be somewhere else, which, if I remember correctly, was the Indy 500 with McLaren. So, you know, there are, nobody really cares who's been around and who's done the longest run. It doesn't really matter. But it is something that, you know, people like to hear.
Well, like in the chat room, a random guy, good YouTube name, said that Joe was showing his flex. And I think both in the ways of your unbroken streak, the prestige of being one of the only 10 written media there, and, you know, talking about your grounds. I think when your garden's that big, I think it's not a garden anymore, it's grounds. But yeah, there's a certain...
believe me, it's just a garden. It looks good.
There are wild hippos in Joe's garden.
It's not an estate. We did have a deer the other day who popped in to say hi. No, it's, you know, we can't quite spit to the end of the garden, but, you know, you can race there. Well, let me think, who would it be? Ben, who's the fastest bloke around at the moment racing sprint wise?
Usain Bolt. I might be out of date.
Usain Bolt. That's the one. Yeah. Usain Bolt. He'd probably be there in about, I think he'd get to the end of the garden in about 9.2 seconds or something, you know.
Fair enough. Looks vast. It must have been
fish. I can't do it in 9.2 seconds, but there you are. He would not be able to slow down before falling in the pond, however.
It's a lake.
It would be ugly.
It's a lake. Don't listen to
it. It's not a lake. It's a pond.
Joe, I want to scroll back to a couple of things you said very early on, because we had chat room comments. Daniel picked up on you saying about, you know, you shouldn't be consorting with the wrong people in between races. Now, does this mean that they're asking you to kind of quarantine yourself? Or, as Daniel suggests, does that mean you can't talk to me in between races because I'm the wrong sort of person?
No. It means that what they want you to do and what you commit to doing, you have to sign. It's like a legal contract. You commit to basically not mixing with other groups in the period. So when I'm in Austria for 8 days, there will be the first race, and then the Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, there will be a period when you could logically mix with all the Formula One people who are all stuck in the same area doing nothing.
But they're asking you not to, right?
And they're asking you not to because everybody's being asked, and in fact, being told effectively, because we're all signing these kind of bits of paper saying that we will not do that. So they will all mix with themselves. They will stay in hotels and have parties and whatever, but they won't mix with each other. And they won't mix with us. And if they do mix with us, they're doing it wrong, because what we're trying to avoid is people catching things. So, you know, I think it's our duty to respect the rules. I think it's more of a duty to respect the rules and, you know, thinking we can get a great story out of sneaking in and trying to talk to Toto Wolff or whatever. I think that, you know, but believe me, there are people who are going to try stuff like that, probably. But I think that we have an obligation. In fact, we have a legal obligation, now we've signed the contracts, not to do that. So if that was to happen, we could be answerable for the damage it causes, you know, which could be a lot of money, actually, if, you know, if Formula One, if COVID starts to sort of take off in the Formula One world and it's because some journalist decided to go and have a chat with somebody, there would be financial implications, which would probably put the journalist out of business, I would think, because most journalists can't afford to dip into their pocket and come up with $100 million to replace the money that went missing, you know.
Daniel would like to thank you for answering your question seriously when all he was trying to do was insinuate that I'm a wrong'un. Yes, yes, Daniel. Yes, we got that. Thank you very much. Now, this might sound like an insult.
As I will not be seeing Spanners in real life, the only virus I can give him is virtual, so...
Oh dear, that was quite frightening to see on the video. Joe, this might sound like an insult initially. It's not meant to be, but your technique for getting stories, we see you lurking in the back of Sky... backgrounds, you kind of not ambush, but you do. You're like a stalker. You ambush your prey and catch people in down moments and comfortable moments. Use your existing relationships to get them. So you've got kind of a plus and a minus there. Yes, you won't be able to wander around grabbing people, so that's going to be a significant hurdle. But as one of the 10 print media people, you are going to become quite a focus for F1 news despite the limited access.
Yeah, I think that's true. I don't think, you know, I think the idea that we're all going to be scooping one another, if we can do it on telephones, maybe. But no, I can't, you know, I operate by chatting with people in the paddock, often, you know, behind the motorhomes, you know, in between the trucks, have little conversations that you learn stuff. And I can't do that. So that is obviously that's a bit of a handicap for the way I do things. But, you know, that is... It's becoming more and more difficult to do that over time because gradually the great PR machines are taking everybody and squeezing out that kind of thing. They really don't like me doing it. They don't like me going and having sort of snap interviews with people. they you know, and in fact, they're training their own staff now to, you can't talk to journalists without us. And, you know, this whole level of control, I understand to some extent why it happens, but I think it is... a negative thing because everything sounds the same when they all start. Someone's making telephoning me. Can you believe
who would be interrupting you during Inside F1 with Joe Saywood? Unbelievable.
Well, somebody was. Anyway, they'll probably keep trying, knowing my luck. Anyway, there we are.
It might be a breaking news story. If it's Toto, I don't mind. Answer it. We'll leave the stream running. It'll be okay.
I shall send a message saying, stop doing it. and that way it will be best because otherwise I'm sure they'll just keep trying.
Let me ask you a question from Mike Stoner, who dropped in a fiver in our super chat. Thank you very much. I'll split that with you, Joe. We can have half a pint each. Mike is... basically wants to know what is next for Vettel. Has there been any movement in that? And I think it's something on a lot of people's minds. Vettel is a very popular driver, four-time world champion, currently sitting there without a contract. It's going to be one of the biggest kind of burning, sitting, red-hot, smouldering news stories of 2020 until we find something out.
Well, I think Vettel will do nothing until we find out what Lewis Hamilton's doing. That's fairly obvious. I think that Mercedes aren't overly interested in trying to put Vettel alongside Lewis. And it's highly unlikely that Lewis is going to retire. But, you know, you never know. Things can happen. So it wouldn't surprise me if they just sit around and wait until quite late on to see that nothing happens to Lewis. Because everyone else is going to wait for Vettel. If there's anybody waiting for him. Renault may be waiting for him. He may be waiting to sign for Renault. Renault might say to him, look, actually, we want to get this sorted out. But Renault have already said they haven't even discussed it with him yet. And I don't see anywhere else for him to go, really. So unless he wants to sit out a year, which is never a good idea, unless you're going into a team that you know. I remember Alain Prost did it a long, long time ago. I think. Am I getting myself confused here? Yes, he did. He sat out a year and then came back and won the world championship. But it was only because he was going into Williams at a time when Williams was virtually unbeatable. So most people who take a year out and come back are not as good. Niki Lauda did it too, but that was slightly different. He retired and then came back and took a while to win the second and third championships. So basically, it is, you know, these are things we don't really know the answers to. And I don't see any reason really in people talking. You know, you can have a chat with Renault and say, well, you know, what are your intentions, etc. But are they actually going to sign anything? I don't think so. And that means that clogs the market up, because obviously the market is based on like the domino effect as it goes down through the best drives. So if there's a snag in the domino stops until that snag is sorted out. And then quite often when the market moves again, there'll be a lot of stuff that's been put in place. It all happens at the same time, which is what happened when with the Vettel leaving Ferrari thing. We saw two moves very quickly, but they had already been put in place some time before.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If I put my Vettel fan hat on, I'm not a Vettel fan. I've got great respect for him, though, and I wish him well. He seems like a really nice bloke, to be fair, a funny guy, clearly a talented driver. My fear for him, I mean, we looked at Daniel Ricciardo speaking out recently and saying he was scared that if he didn't take this McLaren deal now, maybe it wasn't there. Maybe it wasn't there at the end of 2020. I worry for Vettel if he is clearly now, in the eyes of Ferrari, the number two driver, or not at least not the long-term option, that his stock can only go down in 2020 if he starts getting Massa Barrichello-type treatment at the hands of Charles Leclerc, and then suddenly, you know, no one wants him at the end of 2020. So part of me is a Vettel, my Vettel fan hat, my fake Vettel fan hat, says, I hope he signs a contract now, just get it done.
I think that Vettel is... like all these guys, they're all hyper-competitive. So he's not going to underperform in the extent to which, you know, people, very rarely do people go off the boil unless they know they're retiring. That happens when people are retiring. If Vettel goes off the boil, we might be able to look at it and say he's going to retire at the end of the year. But if he wants to have a drive, he's got to prove that he's still worth it. But he... in his own mind, it will be proving I'm Vettel. They've got this wrong at Ferrari. You know, I am the great Vettel. I'm going to do that. You know, I'm going to beat Charles bloody Leclerc. You know, he might be the new young
he's
kid.
He's 12.
On the block.
I can beat him.
Exactly. He's just left school and, you know, basically I can beat him. So, you know, these are the kind of thought processes that go on with racing drivers. And it's very... you know, normal people are not like racing drivers. They don't think in the same way. It's like, you know, you don't think, well, there's no point in trying because, you know, they're getting rid of me. Why would I help them? That doesn't happen in Formula One very often. Because, you know, they're just very, very competitive. And they know you're only as good as your last result. So Vettel knows that he is looking at a future of no Formula One career if he doesn't do a decent job. And if you look around the market of motorsport, we are going into the post-COVID economic environment as well. There will not be a lot out there paying a decent amount of money for anybody. So, you know, a factory drive with a factory team. Sorry, I'll say that again. A factory drive in sports car racing, like, you know, Mark Webber jumped off and went to become a Porsche star for a few years. Alonso's effectively done the same thing. That those kind of deals are going to be very thin on the ground, I think. And I think that, you know, if you want to be a top line racing driver earning good quids, not that Vettel needs to, you know, he's made enough money in his career to live happily ever after 12 times over. But that's not the point. The point is, what is he going to do? Because these guys also, a lot of them, have no clue what they want to do in life beyond being what they are. In that respect, Lewis is a bit different because he's developed career plans. Most people in most racing drivers in Formula One don't have that kind of organization. They're just so focused on doing what they're doing. They don't think about, you know, they leave it to managers to do things. And, you know, sometimes managers will set things up and the driver will go, actually, I don't really want to do that. You know, now I think about it. Because they don't care. Their sole purpose is to win Formula One races and to make lots of money. But they get bored if they're there just spending money. They get bored, and some of them go quite bonkers in lots of respects. Hello.
Hopefully that's not okay. So full disclosure there, like awkward silence. I could just brush past it, but I'm just getting used to my new aircon system in the shed show, where when you're talking, and thankfully you have a lot to say, I can cool the temperature of the shed down. It did come at a terrible price. My wife made me sell my golf clubs to finance it. Ooh, curse that lady. But in that situation, I couldn't find the off button. So you got a nice blast.
I was
blast
wondering what you were up to,
But at least I'm cool as a cucumber. Well, that is definitely a situation that isn't going to go away. People aren't going to stop asking us about Vettel. And what I want to see is a happy Vettel, because he seems to be at his best when he's a happy, chirpy Vettel. But, you know, you can't really imagine him in the Alonso and Jensen Button back of the grid, playfully kind of jumping up on the podium, being self-effacing. I just don't see him quite in that role and just going, yeah, whatever, I'm at the back, you know. Not that those guys were happy about it, but I just can't see. I see it all or nothing.
If you're in a car that will not do the job, which was the case for Button and Alonso, you really have no choice. You can be a grumpy bastard, or you can just be positive and laugh it off, and make it clear that there's nothing you can do about it. And that really is, in Formula One, yeah, you can say pretty clearly that there's only X number of teams that can win at the moment. So two rules. One is you don't give up one of those drives unless you have to. And the second one is if you can't win races, you know, people will understand. So, you know, you can be a little bit more human. There's absolutely no point in being grumpy about it. You know, in the wrong place at the wrong time, that's life, isn't it?
Can we talk TV? Since we're on the German theme, can you clear up some of this stuff? I'll tell you what, we've got a couple of questions. I'll just spit the questions out from these two people on the Twitters. Joe is at Joe Saywood on Twitter. We are at Missed Apex F1. And if I may be so bold, I am at Spanners Ready. I love getting followers. I like Twitter. I do things, talk about F1, share stuff about my family. You can see a hilarious video of me walking our family cat, because that's something apparently we do at Spanners Ready. Here are the questions, though, for you, Joe. Kadar says, with one or zero German drivers left from Germany, is the exclusive pay TV deal, meaning that Mick Schumacher may never get that F1 seat? So that's Mick Schumacher. And Stephen G says, what are your thoughts about the German Sky TV deal? What does it tell you about the state of F1 in Germany? And how do you think this will change the engagement of F1s in Germany with the sport? Didn't F1 lose many fans in Britain after their Sky deal? So what's changed? Yes. What is happening first? Because I don't actually know.
Well, basically what's happened is that RTL, which is a free-to-air broadcaster, has said, that's it. We're not paying the fees anymore because we want to put the money into football, which is more popular. Why is it more popular? It's more popular because despite having Vettel in a Ferrari in recent years and Mercedes winning things, Germany hasn't been able to fund a Grand Prix. And the reality is that nobody has ever replaced Michael Schumacher in the eyes of the German fans. German fans were fans of Schumacher, and there were very interesting and complicated social connections between Schumacher and his fans to do with, you know, where he came from, the time he rose up to fame, the unified Germany. He embodied the unified Germany, which is a very important thing. Vettel never managed to inspire the fans in that way. Nico Rosberg, who on paper was German, of course they went, well, what's it got to do with Germany, really? Nico Hülkenberg lived too close to the Dutch border, wasn't really, you know, there are all these silly things.
Ooh, they're very picky. Very picky, then.
No, well, maybe, but you know, the fact is that they all remember the great Schumi.
Thing is, as Brits, we're far less picky. It's like, oh, he visited Britain once. Yep, he's ours. We'll claim him. We take them all.
Well, I don't know about that, but basically, you know, that's what's happened in Germany. And I the one I don't understand is the Mercedes thing. I just don't understand why they're not excited about Mercedes. Okay. The team is a British team with a Mercedes label slapped on it, but and the engines are made in Britain. But nonetheless, it is still a German company, and they just don't seem to be interested in it. So anyway, whatever the outcome of that is, that they don't want to pay the money that Formula One wants for the rights. Sky Germany. It's quite complicated in the German TV market because there have been three different broadcasters in recent years. Yeah. RTL is the big free-to-air one. And there have been two pay television ones, or one pay television and another free-to-air. I'm not quite sure. Can't remember the details. But basically, there are three companies and they had different restrictions on it, a bit like Channel 4 and Sky in Britain, but with more restrictions. So what's happened is that Sky Germany is going to take over. I don't know if it's the whole thing or if the third broadcaster will be in or out, but fundamentally it's going to be like a deal, and it will be big money because, you know, Sky can pay big money because they have the subscribers. It does mean that the number of overall viewers will drop, but it also means that the amount of money will increase. So and there's a balancing act on all of this. With the over-the-top, the OTT Formula One channel, which they're trying to promote, which will ultimately, in theory at least, damage pay TV channels. It'll take out the middleman, you know, going directly to the punters. So I don't know, we'll see, but that's basically what's happening. It will have an impact on the number of eyeballs that happen with Formula One. No question about it, but it will improve the balance sheet. And let's face it, what are they in it for? Are they in it for love or are they in it for money?
Well, just from a personal point of view.
When it comes to Liberty Media, they're in it for money, believe me. they might like Formula One, but they're not in it for the love of the sport and to make everyone want to watch Formula One because they like it. They're in it to make money. So we have to accept that. We have to accept that, you know, they are better than the previous lot. CVC Capital Partners, a bunch of vultures who just picked the flesh off what was left of Formula One's bones for years on end.
Joe Saywood's opinions do not represent the wider Missed Apex something something. Lawyers, please help.
Yes. No, you don't need to, because this is all true. And in the court of law, you cannot fight the truth. CVC Capital Partners were basically just they were milking the cash cow until it basically ran out of milk, and then they flogged it. So, you know, and I happen to think, it's a personal opinion, this, so I can say this as well, but graceless bunch they were too.
Okay.
So, you know, that's just me. I happen to be a Formula One fan, and they probably understand that I don't like what they did, but they are private equity people, and they all live in big castles, and that's what they do. That's what they're supposed to do. So they'll think, well, we just did a good job, and this bloke's just one of those silly anorak nerd types. And I think they're a bunch of vultures who did damage to the sport. And that's just an inevitability of the way different philosophies work, I suppose. So none of that's legally troublesome anyway.
No, I mean, I get very upset about this and the Sky deal last year as well. I think back to my own childhood. I was a sports mad kid, But we were a low-income family, and I genuinely felt like all those sports were being stolen from me from Sky, and then suddenly you were lucky just to get, you know, highlights of boxing or cricket or anything
But if you take a step back and take the passion out of it and you look at it from a business point of view, they didn't throw open the stadiums if you wanted to go and watch a football game. You had to pay.
True.
And it's kind of logical that you should pay for coverage of something, because, you know, once you get to a point at which they can only earn so much money from the number of eyeballs, there have to be other ways of doing it. And so while I fully understand, and there is a generation of people in Britain particularly who think that pay television is the end of civilization as they know it. And it is. But the fact is that Britain is unusual. Lots of other societies are used to paying for their sport. America, you're used to paying for your sport. You want to watch it, you pay. You understand that.
I'll just caveat that, you know, at the time my father was paying his license fee. So we were paying for the sport.
Yeah, no, you were paying for the sport, but the BBC had access at the kind of numbers involved in those days and the license fee and all the rest of it. Yes, you did have the license fee, but you're still paying a license fee now and you're not getting it, are you? So, you know, when all is said and done, the BBC could not afford to bid against Sky. They didn't have the money. So in the end, they cut deals with them for a while and, you know, managed to stay in the game. But there's a point at which you cannot compete against dollars. And that's what happened.
I assumed, now, sorry.
Is that right? Is that wrong? It's just life. You just have to accept it. And, you know, I fully understand why people are grumpy in Britain, because they're so used to it. And that's because the BBC did a great job getting all the sport and televising it for next to nothing, you know, and providing everything for free. But in other societies, that was all paid for from quite early on.
Yes. And I have to say, I assumed we would see a big dip in our podcast listening figures last season. In fact, we went from strength to strength. I think the hardcore of people who want to keep watching it will find a way or will pay. It's obviously the future generations that's the big worry.
Yeah, the future generations. They're used to paying for things, you know. They understand you have to pay for things. The thing is whether they will be excited by it. So our job, our role is to get them excited by it. And I think that's where the lockdown has been really good for the Vermoja sport, is that everything has gone virtual and kids can relate to virtual. And I think that we've got a new generation of fans who will come to Formula One because of the virtual races. And I think, you know, I think we will. I'm not a sort of a Jonah saying it's the end of civilization as we know it. Things change. That's the way it is. But we have to, you know, Bernie Eccleston is famous for saying he doesn't care about the kids because they don't buy Rolexes. That was such a short-sighted view. And it wasn't the right view at all. You've got to look to the future. You've got to nurture your future fans. Otherwise, your business is going to die because your viewership will die. It's just called, you know, it's called age. You know, you get to a certain point and you die. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is.
But if you're a 55-year-old executive hedge fund manager, you don't necessarily care about, you know, in 20 years' time. So a lot of that stems from there. Just to wrap this up in a bow and go back to Kedar's question, does this affect the next generation of Schumachers? There's two, Mick and David. They presumably will.
Well, we'll have to see if either one of them is good enough, to be quite honest. And that is, it's all very well wanting to have another famous name coming in. But that famous name's got to be able to compete at a sensible level. You can't just have some bloke trolling around at the back because his dad was somebody famous. You just can't have it. And I know you have some views perhaps about the Stroll family or whatever, you know. But the fact is that no matter which way you cut it, Lance Stroll's still been on two podiums. And that tells you that he's good enough in certain days to be there. So we have to see what Mick can do. He was very disappointing, I thought, in Formula 2 last year. Much less impressive than Guan Yu Zhou, for example, or Joe, as we're supposed to call him, the Renault young driver from China.
Yes.
I think he did a terrific job as a new boy. last year. And, you know, we have to see who is good enough. And it's like all these things about, you know, everybody wants to be live in an egalitarian world. But in order to live in an egalitarian world, you have to accept that talent is what decides matters. And ultimately, if you want to have a woman Formula One driver, you've got to have someone with talent to be there, to deserve it. If you want to have drivers from different countries or different races, they've got to be good enough to be there. Formula One would love to have a Chinese driver. Formula One would love to have a female driver. But until we get a good one, you can't just promote people because they happen to be what you're looking for. They've got to have the talent to do the job. And so, and we've seen it endlessly, trying to promote people who don't have sufficient talent to be there. They last a couple of years and they disappear. So, and if you look back in time, you'll see lots of drivers from countries who were really keen to have a Formula One driver, but if they weren't good enough, that driver went away. And, you know, that's the bottom line. So, you know, the people in Formula One really are, to a lesser or greater extent, the best drivers out there.
So for my views on this topic, listen back to Sunday's show about an hour in. I shan't repeat myself at length. I think my views differ slightly to yours, Joe, and reasonable people can disagree. But yes, your overall point is generally taken. But I might move it swiftly on to some questions about team news. We've had units drop in. A tenner, Joe. That's you and me sitting in a beer garden having a full-on pint, socially distant, of course. Thank you very much, units. And £5 attached to a question as well from John M. Very generous in the super chat today. A nice function from YouTube. I don't know what cut they take, so it might have to be like an off-brand beer. I don't know. John N. says, I've been a fan of the Silverstone team since the 7-Up Jordan. Do I need to worry for the future of all this with Stroll, Wolf, and Aston gossip? And I have to say, we've got another couple of questions on teams. In fact, let me just quickly get to them, Joe, because I think there's a general theme here of, you know,
should we do this one first and then move on to other teams?
Yeah, afterwards? You're right. Let's do that.
I think Aston Martin's whatever it's called this week, Racing Point, is probably one of the least worrisome teams at the moment. Lawrence Stroll is a multimillionaire. A squillionaire, billionaire, whatever. He can afford to do what he wants to do. He's bought himself a car company. It's kind of logical. If you buy yourself a car company, there's a plan to promote it. The plan is very simple. It's the Ferrari plan, which is you use motorsport to do your PR and you don't bother paying for other things. So I think you'll stop seeing Aston Martin flash car adverts in car magazines and things like that. I think they'll probably be smart enough to keep up the link with James Bond, because that's a slam
that's
dunk.
That's a no-brainer.
It is, yeah. A no-brainer. So basically, I think that what they really need to do is therefore to be as competitive as possible in Formula One as quickly as possible. Now, if you're going to do that and you're going to be taken seriously, the first thing you need is not a customer racing engine. You need your own engine. And so I think that Aston Martin will have its own Formula One engine at some point in the not too distant future.
Oh.
And it's entirely logical. I don't know if you know this, but they have recently announced in March, I think it was, a V6 hybrid turbo engine for their road cars.
Oh, well, oh, that's a
3-litre. Now, if you're going to have a 3-litre V6 hybrid turbo, why not have 1.5 as well?
Yeah.
Andy Cowell, come to think of it. If you're going to produce the best engine in Formula One, what's the best way of doing it?
It's all coming
together.
And if
you've got money. Well, it's not coming together, but there's logic in it somewhere. And basically, Aston Martin using other people's engines, it's a bit like Alfa Romeo using Ferrari engines. It's just a waste of time. Alfa Romeo doesn't have the money to do anything else, but that whole Sauber thing is a complete waste of time. You're not selling Alfa Romeo cars as a result of it. You're not even increasing the brand value of Alfa Romeo, because everyone knows it's Sauber and everyone in the team calls it Sauber. I mean, you know, nobody even bothers with Alfa Romeo. So, if you're going to do it properly, do it properly. If you're going to do it half-assed, do it half-assed, and it won't work. So I think that we can expect to see things like that happening, which are not necessarily obvious at the moment. I mean, the engine formula runs till 2025, the end of, which means you've got, if you can produce an engine in a new engine in for 2022.
Ooh, that's close.
Or 2023, you've still got 3 years left on it. So it's got a value, not only having your own engine, but it's a value of being competitive for 3 years before you have to change engines to a new formula. So there is kind of logic if you can move quickly. And I think that I think that's, I don't know, my gut feeling says that may be what we see. I may be wrong, but I've been banging on about this kind of thing with Aston Martin, with Andy Palmer for years, having conversations with Andy at races going, you've got to get your own engine, Andy. It just doesn't make any sense to do otherwise. And he would admit it.
I feel like you've just confirmed Cowell to Aston Martin engines. That's what I feel like's just happened here.
Well, I have suggested it might be it might be an explanation, because I can't think of another explanation.
So can
because I? Andy comes from Northamptonshire. Actually, I'm not sure where he comes from originally, but he comes from England, and he's an English bloke. And I can't see him moving to Italy. I can't see him moving to Paris.
It's far away.
Because there are certain cosmopolitan type people who don't mind moving around and doing their job elsewhere, but they're not generally English because they don't generally speak other languages. So, you know, when you have somebody who's clearly the best in his job in the world, and he's leaving the best job in the world, you've got to say, well, where's he going? And there is only one choice, because if he's not going to Paris and he's not going to Italy, he's certainly not going to Japan, because they don't want foreigners anyway, because they think that's not in their philosophy. So the only thing he can be doing, if he's staying in Formula One, and that's an interesting point, the only thing he could be doing is going to something we don't know about.
And can I just give a shout out to those websites that like to quote Missed Apex podcast stuff, but not actually say where that information came from? Could you do the decent thing and just do a link back to this YouTube channel with the timestamp? So by all means, run it on your website.
It's actually been out there already.
Has it? Ah, Joe.
I ran it in my business newsletter on Sunday.
But that's not where they'll get it from, though. They'll get it from you saying it here.
Actually, Monday morning it went out for the first time. But I saw it being quoted on a website and was quite surprised, because websites are not supposed to quote from my newsletter.
Naughty. They'll definitely quote from this, though. I think the ones I'm talking about.
They can do, they can do.
Joe, then, let's move on to those other teams, because Serotonin Starved Brain on, that's a good Twitter handle, @FatalsWillIWhatIWill. Okay, cool. He's basically asking about the sale price of these teams that have been purporting to be potentially for sale or looking for investors. Now, off the top of your head, Joe, I think people are kind of just asking, you know, well, what sort of prices are we talking about? Is this bargain bucket stuff, or is this F1 teams kind of hyping themselves up and trying to get your top dollar still, buy an F1 team, if they are even for sale?
I think that what it is the Formula One teams are in a bind. They're short of cash, and they're looking for ways to raise cash without losing control. That's what they want. Now, Williams is in more difficulty than most, because the Williams family only controls 52%. So to retain control, they can only sell 2%. Oof. Having said that, you can increase the share capital. You can buy out somebody else and increase the share capital and still stay in control. But basically, I think what they're doing is they've just said to merchant banks or investment banks, whatever you want to call them, go and see what's available, who will pay what, and we'll see what we do after that. And I think that's true in the case of Williams, and I think that's true in the case of McLaren. They both have problems that they need to solve. But it doesn't mean that there's a sort of, you know, rushing to a sale, fire sale kind of thing. You know, there's plenty of money invested in McLaren. There's plenty of money invested in Williams. And they're not just going to go and give it away to the nearest multi-squillionaire. Now, it may be that they'll do a deal. You know, just imagine Williams. We have a Canadian billionaire who has loaned them some money.
Okay.
He's got money coming out of his ears. Okay, his son drives for Williams. He's a shareholder in McLaren, minor point. But maybe he'd like to be a bigger shareholder in Williams, but on the basis that he would agree when becoming a bigger shareholder in Williams to always vote with the Williams family. So, you know, you can have situations where you can give away, and Bernie did this up to a point, you know, you can give away control. And what happened with Bernie is he gave away control, but kept control because of shareholder agreement until the Kirsch empire went bankrupt, in which case he lost control of what he was previously in control of. And that is where all the problems started in Formula One. So you can do this stuff. And you can go down to, you know, quite small percentages. Ron Dennis and McLaren and Mansour Oje were in a situation where they were in minority shareholdings, but they had a shareholders agreement to work together until the day they didn't, which is why McLaren began to sort of go off the boil and all went a bit crazy, because the shareholders did not agree. So, you know, we need to look at those kind of things. But is anybody actually for sale? The other point is, do you really want to buy a Formula One team? And I don't mean
yes.
That. Yes, everybody. You know,
do more you, than anything.
Hang on. You want to buy a ticket to be part of the game. But do you want everything else that Formula One teams have? Because you're going into another age now with budget capping and restrictions. You don't want two wind tunnels anymore. You don't want all the staff you've got. You want to lose some of them. You actually want to, and also with all the technical things, you don't need the departments that they have. You don't need the massive factories. So a lot of people who are thinking about coming into Formula One, and there aren't a lot out there who are seriously doing it, but there are some, and they are thinking, well, we don't really want to buy teams. Because look at Haas. Look what Haas has done. Haas has not really got the same kind of infrastructure as everybody else. They've bought what they need to be a Formula One team, and no more. And so why would you buy one of these big old, you could always call them white elephant teams, because it's got a lot of stuff you don't want. So you need to balance these things up in what is the value. The value is in what agreements that they've signed. Well, right now, there are no commercial agreements in Formula One for the future. So I'd say that the teams have very little value until the Concorde Agreement is signed, which is due to happen between now and December the 31st, on paper, there's not a lot of value in them because they haven't got an entry beyond the end of this year.
That's a very good point. And I guess, so if someone did swoop in, there's no guarantee that they could even race.
Well, logically, if somebody came in and bought a team a la Stroll situation, they would negotiate a similar deal to what the previous owner had had. But that's only in a theoretical world. We're living in a COVID world now. And who knows? Who knows what will happen? And there is no commercial agreement. So therefore, it's, you know, if you have a lawyer or a risk assessor, they will say, well, hang on a minute, where's the bit of paper that proves that this thing has a value? And the answer is there isn't one right now. So you know, you need to think these things through, because big purchases are generally not made without input from risk assessors and all these other kind of people, lawyers, who say, well, hang on a minute, you know, this is worth nothing. So right now, they all need money, and to a lesser or greater extent, and, you know, and then we go from there. But I think, you know, most of them can borrow more money. They have sufficient supporters, and the billionaires behind most of the teams have at least a billionaire behind them. And whether the billionaire wants to spend his money is another matter. You know, does the man at Sauber want to go on spending his own money? And the answer is probably not. But then again, there's the ego that gets in the way as well. Like, do I want a team to fail? No, I don't. So, you know, people get stuck in these traps. But when you're at a certain level, there's no point at which, a la Malia, you ran out of money completely, and then you're screwed, and everybody's screwed, because you can't just go on living on the never, never forever. So,
thank you very much for your time, Joe Saywood. We have run over an hour here. I have an appointment with the Remain Indoors podcast with Matt and Alex Van Gien, and Joe Saywood has to go tend his grounds, instruct people to tend his grounds, go pheasant shooting, all those kind of countryside Earl-like activities, Joe.
Yeah, with my wrist, I'm really good at shooting.
That's a good point. You'll have to have your butler. You'll have to have the butler shoot for you.
I actually don't believe in shooting things. In fact, I'm very much against it.
Oh,
so there you are.
Well, there you go, Joe. There you go. Oh, you are going to be going to the F1 circus. You're going to be one of the coveted 10 written press people. But that doesn't mean that we can't get hold of you. We have some tentative plans to try and speak to you at some point via the internet. So I think we'll attempt something like that, Joe. What are you thinking?
Yes, absolutely. The only factor that will influence that is the ability of Austrian internet to work properly. But I will take this with me in my automobile.
He's pointing to the Yeti.
And I will take a little camera-y thing if necessary. And so if it works, it works. We did one a few years ago. I tried to do one from a hotel in Italy, and it was a complete disaster.
It didn't quite work.
Because the internet was rubbish. But we'll see. Maybe I can do something from... actually, it's an interesting point. I suppose
The limits.
The broadcasting rules at Formula One will remain the same despite coronavirus. I wouldn't be able to do it from the press room necessarily, which is daft because that will have the good enough internet to do it.
If you don't ask, you don't get. They might go, "No, it's all right. It's you, Joe. And that Spanish fella, we like him. We've heard of him."
Don't be silly. There are lawyers at Formula One, and lawyers at Formula One don't have a sense of humour necessarily. I know some who have had. But, you know, generally speaking, it's like sort of no. No. Oh, yes, if you pay us a lot of money. Anyway, there we are, enough of that.
Well, maybe we've got enough with our Super Chat money. Maybe we'll have to look again. Thank you very much for your time. Go and find Joe at Joe Saywood. Go to Flat Out Publishing to find his books. And what do we search for? Joe Blogs F1 for your regular blog. And that finds out all the stuff about F1 and news and stuff.
Yep.
Good.
There you go. You've said it all.
Good at plugging things. Subscribe to us at youtube.com/MissedApex podcast, I think. That's my worst outro ever. I choked. Wounds heal.
It was rubbish, I got to tell you.
I could do it again. Wounds heal. Chicks dig scars and glory lasts forever. There you go. No one says I have to say it in a certain order. I pressed the button too quickly. That's where it went wrong. It's because it's too cool in here with the aircon. I'm super relaxed.
Your brain has frozen.
I'm like proper chill. I just feel like I'm on like in a Canary Islands hotel room with my aircon running, about to attack the pool with a margarita.
Marvelous. Well, that sounds great. I must rush off to my estate then. So
there we go. Brilliant. We'll catch up with you soon, Joe.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.